Welcome to the latest Beef and Lamb New Zealand podcast, everybody. Some time back, I remember going to a conference and one of the papers there was entitled Myths, Legends and Other Sheep Breeding Techniques, which was, I think, a bit of a tongue and in cheek title, but it was also poking the borax a little at some of the ideas that were floating around in sheep breeding. And this was quite some time ago, and I think it was around the late 90s, early 2000s, that Beef and Lamb New Zealand's predecessor at the time, or predecessors, the Meat Board and the Wool Board, as they were then, got Sheep Improvement Limited to get rid of some of those myths and legends and not replace, there was stuff already in place, but make it a wee bit more coordinated and bring the weight of the industry levy funding behind it as well. So the point of this podcast is to talk about the latest development in that, a couple of new tools or pieces of information, if you like, around ram buying and finding the best ram for your farm. So I'm joined today by Annie O'Connell, who's with Beef and Lamb Genetics. And there's a wee bit of background there, so I'm going to get her to explain. Firstly, Annie, welcome to the call. Explain, I guess, your role, and always helps to set the scene, what you did before you came to Beef and Lamb Genetics.
Okay, sure. Good to be here. So, I'll start with where I was before. I've been in agriculture for a long time. I belonged to Ag Research when I left my university, and I was 15 years there working with reproduction and sheep, and I progressed through that. I started in Wellington and then moved down to Dunedin and Invermay, and was working in embryo survival in the end with the sheep. But I left Ag Research in 2014. And I went off to do something a bit different, working with sheep milking at Blue River Dairy in Invercargill. And that was a little bit of a return home to where I'd been brought up as well, down in Southland. So I'd been on a sheep farm originally as a young'un down there. So sheep milking was a fantastic enterprise. It was really interesting, a lot of my skills there, broadening my appreciation for the wider farming spectre. Mm-hmm. But I returned back to Dunedin and joined Beef and Lamb Genetics in 2015, and getting a bit more to more traditional sheep style farming.
What's your role with Beef and Lamb Genetics?
So I'm in an extension role, and the way I see that role, simply put, is that rams and bulls, so I work with beef as well, but rams in particular are an investment in your profitability on farm, and my role is to help you with choosing wisely with that. So that means I work with breeders to help them ramp up their genetic gain, but also get transparency in how the merit of their flocks are, and help make it easier for commercial farmers to build the genetic plan so they know what rams they're looking for, but also seek those rams that match that. And that's it in a nutshell.
And are you sheep across the whole country, or do you do both sheep and beef, just the South Island? What's your sort of
Well, there's been a bit of a change, Aaron. So we've been sheep and beef, I've been sheep and beef in the South Island with a little bit of activity around the progeny test stuff across the country. But recently, my colleague Max and I, Max is in the North Island, Max Tweedy, but we've come from a sheep and a beef expertise background, so we're actually moving towards, now I'll be working with sheep across nationally, and Max will be moving to beef nationally, but that's just a really recent development and going forward. But
excellent.
But we'll still support beef with each other.
Good. Right, now it gets a wee bit confusing because there's Beef and Lamb New Zealand and now there's Beef and Lamb Genetics, well there has been for a good couple of years now, so who are Beef and Lamb Genetics? What do they do? What's the relationship with Beef and Lamb New Zealand?
Okay, well, as the title would suggest, we are actually fully owned by Beef and Lamb. So we are an organisation fully owned by Beef and Lamb and funded by Beef and Lamb levies. But we're also funded through MB, so with our R&D around genetics. And we're also funded through SIL, with the breeders are charged for being part of that database as well. So and some other third-party stuff in there. So we have our own board to report to. So we're a separate organisation, but we're fully owned and definitely have a mandate to work for commercial farmers as well as breeders.
So the first, as I referred to, the first sort of foray of the producer boards, there were two producer boards back in the day, was Sheep Improvement Limited, that's SIL, S-I-L. That still exists, it's now just sort of a tool or a service of Beef and Lamb Genetics.
And we're responsible for the delivery of that.
Okay, so I worked in extension as well, and so for years we were helping to just try and dispel some of those myths and legends around sheep breeding, and We spent a lot of time talking to farmers about dual purpose overall indexes, DPOs, and TSOs, terminal sire overall indexes, but they've gone out the window, and that's the purpose of the call. So what are these new tools or indexes that Beef and Lamb Genetics are providing for sheep farmers?
Yeah, cool. Well, look, we've responded to commercial farmers saying that when they go from one flock to another, there's different indexes, there's different things, evaluations to be considering, different makeup of all those different indexes. So working with breeders, we thought we'd try and find a way to make it simple. At least there's one common index that should be available for maternal breeds and available for terminal breeds. And we've agreed that the New Zealand maternal worth, the core things that make up there are her reproduction, her lamb survival, that's direct, and also the ability of the ewe to have be a good mother.
Yep.
The lamb growth, the adult size, because we know when we put emphasis on selection for lamb growth, we tend to get bigger sized animals, and so that needs to be factored in there. That we're putting a bit of a brake on that adult size, and wool is still a component of our income, and so it is still factored into that New Zealand maternal worth. And the terminal worth, we've agreed that in there should be growth, lamb growth is a very dominant part of that. Meat yield, so the amount of flesh you're going to get in addition for a certain carcass weight. And also survival, the lamb has got to be vigorous enough to survive to get to that slaughter. So those are core standard indexes that we can use, and you could find them be reported on any flock.
So we're going to dig into those components of the index, so it's an overall sort of number, but how does that, I mean, those traits all sound important, but also sound familiar. How do they differ from what we had in the DPO and the TSOs and that we used to have in the past?
Well, they are similar. It's just that we the DPO also included health traits, and we recognise that there are some breeders that are really putting a lot of emphasis on facial eczema, for example, in the North Island, or worm feck might be a particular trait that some breeders are doing very well at, and others are emphasising meat yield in the maternal sheep. So those, what we've decided is that, because it's not for everyone, that's better to add those specialist traits as a add-on to the maternal worth to make it a bit clearer. When a commercial farmer fronts up to see a number on an index value, they can tell it's got it's either the core index or the core index plus those added feature traits.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's how it differs.
Good. Yeah, so sometimes it was in the mix and now it's actually
nice clear. And clear.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, now that's good, because that's something we will drill into that a wee bit more, and that's one of the biggies, you know, those genetics by environment interactions, of which facial eczema is a really, really key one. But the slogan I saw in one of the presentations is, basically, obviously, it's trying to, the higher the number, the better the ram. Is it that simple?
Yeah, so the index points are measured in its dollar value that you're going to get from that ram relative to another.
Okay. So, in the presentation, I see that the average maternal worth, NZMW, that means, is $1,600?
Yes.
So what does that mean, $1,600?
So it's 1,600 cents per ewe lambing. So if you made 100 ewes, it's, it's $1,600 per 100 ewes.
Yep. And that's total, relative. What's that
so
measured?
That,
what's it? Is that a comparison?
It reflects the value of that ram compared to the average in 1995. We had to pick a base year. It's a few years ago, 1995, but at least it gives you a base to compare. And the important thing is you want to compare this ram in front of you with the other ram based on the same number, or based on the same base year. So. Of course, it's an average, so there'll be rams that are above that and rams that are below that.
So is it as simple for a farmer? Look, all other things being equal, and we're going to talk about structure and faults and things like that, but is it as simple, all other things being equal, saying there's one ram with 1,700, one with 1,600, the 1,700 will make me more money on my farm?
That is the prediction, assuming that that structure is covered. Yes, certainly. It's as simple as it's supposed to be.
Okay. And we'll touch a wee bit later on to what that means you can actually pay or afford to pay for that ram for a wee bit more. But look, let's go into the background. You talked about those that's 1,600 compared to the base year of 1995, which is a fair while back now. But hence why some of the figures are getting reasonably high for those of you that might have known DPOs and TSOs in the past. Where do those figures come from? How important is the ram's own performance versus his mother versus all the other relatives that we might be able to track?
So the value is made up of all of that pedigree. Mm-hmm. So and it's weighted depending on how much it's going to predict the progeny. So mm-hmm. it's really a value of the ram as a parent, not just him himself.
Mm-hmm.
But it is based on his. By the time you buy a ram, he won't have many progeny, or he won't have any measured anyway. Mm-hmm. So it is based on his own performance, that of his parents, that of his siblings, his cousins, and it's just the weighting is applied depending on how far away from his pedigree they are. So so it's, you're getting thousands of records to be mm-hmm. relying on rather than just looking at his own weight and perhaps a little bit of his dam and sire information. Yep.
So the information is it's a prediction, but it's also... It's a figure for the family, not the ram?
Yes.
Is that fair?
Yeah. So it's more about finding a Barrett family rather than just a single superhero, Jimmy Corr.
Good point. And then we can get into all nature and nurture and all those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. But so
things being equal,
as a rough proportion, and again, look, all other things being equal, structural, ability to walk and serve use and all those sorts of things which are really important and we'll get into, what proportion or what influence does the ram's own performance have on that figure? Is it half? Is it 10%? Or any idea?
So it's not... not
easily.
Not well...
The example is, can a single-born ram have a higher NLB or a higher index than a twin-born ram?
Okay, so he come from a family line that has more twins in his background. And you think about reproduction, it's a lot governed by environment, mm-hmm. so about how the animal's been grown. So if his dam was a young dam or had not been well grown out as a lamb, she may tend to more singles or dries. But genetically, she's actually got the potential to have mm-hmm. twins if she'd been looked after well. And all you're getting passed on is the genetic component, mm-hmm. not the environmental component. Mm-hmm. So the NLB string can be misleading in that you can have a ram with a very high... Mm. His progeny looked after well will have a really high reproduction, but he himself may look like he's come from something poor. So you want to consider the whole family tree rather than just him himself. Especially so like that.
Take that into account then. Let's take that average ram with an NZMW, a maternal worth of 1600.
Mm-hmm.
That's one individual ram that's got that figure, but do you have an idea how many other individuals might have been contributing to that figure? So how many... Other sheep, is it possible have actually been analysed to come into the...
So there is something that's called accuracy, there's an accuracy that's reported, and so the more information that's available for that animal, the more accurate that mm-hmm. prediction is likely to be. What we have done to make it simple for commercial farmers, and rather than trying to think about accuracy, how reliable is that, we've worked with the breeders to say, if a value is not well benchmarked, so mm-hmm. There hasn't been good connectedness between mm-hmm. flocks, and if it's not a lot of information behind it, so it's got low accuracy, we won't report it.
Yep.
And I think it's been really brave of breeders actually to agree to that mm-hmm. it's actually going to be involving a lot more blanking. They can it can present a value that's within a flock because it's valid to compare mm-hmm. their other rams because it's based on the same background information. But across flock, they're not going to report inaccurate or unreliable mm-hmm. values. So I think that's we're doing that for commercial farmers mm-hmm. so that it's not this misleading.
Good. I do want to drill into connection later on and how you can work across flocks like this, but as an example, and I'm sorry to keep hammering point, but a ram with that figure, that could have his own as one animal's contribution, but that could be 1,000 other sheep could have contributed to that number.
Yes,
quite conceivably ancestors and relatives.
Quite conceivably.
Well, I just wanted to hammer that because that's one point when we're talking to farmers is saying what you see in the yard in front of you may not bear a lot of resemblance to the figure that you're seeing on paper necessarily because it's representing all those animals that you can't see that are that you know through SIL that he's related to and how they've actually gone. So
exactly.
Flip that round though, looking at the animal is really important, and obviously an animal has to be able to walk around the paddock, serve use, do all those basic things which you would assume a breeder is going to take care of and put a ram out with those. But I don't want to get into that too much, but how is it possible that a ram may have physically a, or and is it linked to what we've just been talking about, a ram may have a fault but still have good figures?
if it's a structural fault that's heritable, then we're not going to talk you into buying that ramp for a start. Okay, so if it's something already obvious that you can see, you know, it's a black spot or twisted feet or all the different types of things. But what we're seeing in the figures is that his family members have performed better than other ramps, and so that's what we're still looks at, or that connectedness and benchmarking to sort of see that this family of rams tend to perform better than this other family of rams, given those things are equal. If it's turned up with a fault, as can happen out of the blue, or have a low, you know, might not be many of them in that family have that, but if he has that and it's heritable, I'm not going to talk you into buying that ram. In fact, you shouldn't. It should be.
Well, I think it's one of the myths out there that there's myths about how to select rams, but there's also a myth out there that Beef and Lamb Genetics or Beef and Lamb New Zealand think we should only work on the figures.
Yeah, so we don't say you should be doing figures only. The figures are a tool to be able to help you find out information you couldn't see otherwise, and finding out more about that whole pedigree information that you can't see in the pen necessarily in front of you. Where a structure, we don't. Silk can only report on the numbers that go into it. At the moment, no numbers on structure go into it. However, we are gathering information on the ability for an animal to stay in a flock. So I would assume with time that the stayability index, as it builds with data set, will be able to tell you whether or not this animal is likely to be producing progeny that will last in your flock in the future. But yeah, we expect breeders and other experts in that field to cover structure well.
Okay, but sorry, carry on.
There's one clarification I'd like to make there, though.
Yep.
I think about the way we do farming now. A lot of our knowledge around structure has been from traditional farming that we've been learned over like the last 30 or 40 years of lots of experience. And the only challenge I just put in there is, are we farming today the same way that we were those many years ago? And are some of those things that we've known to look for 30 years ago, are they still associated with the performance that we're thinking? So it's just, there's structure that's going to cost you money or make you money, that's about the animal can breed, and also whether or not it's going to pass on something to the progeny that you won't like. But I just want to make sure that you keep thinking about the structure from the profitable point of view rather than how attractive that sheep might look.
Good point. So, all right, let's talk about profit and dollars and cents. So breeders measure number of lambs born. They measure live weight gain in grams. Those are all quantities, but the index is a value, an amount, an economic amount. So talk us through the economic weightings, how those physical measures are converted into a dollars and cents value. Where do those numbers come from, the economic weightings?
Right, so we engage scientists from Abacus Bio to review the economic weightings that should be applied to each of those traits. I mean, the heritability of the trait, so the amount that the animal is about to pass on is already built into the breeding value, and the economic value is gained from research by those scientists into the current value of lamb, the current cost of feed, and all those different parameters. So they source that from current economic signals in the environment. And we'll be updating that every 3 to 5 years, or if there's a major change, we'll update it sooner. But it's usually a routine around 5 years of being updated for economic value. And we've just done that recently, which is why our numbers have jumped a little bit as well, because the lamb value has increased.
Yeah, but all rams change.
Yeah.
Feel for the same, But the updating them every 3 to 5 years, something like that, is that the sort of the period that the numbers are smoothed over? It's a rolling average or something for the last 3 to 5 years?
We just did this recently in the in the last few months to put these new economic values in. And the last time we'd done that had been 6 to 7 years ago. And actually what we saw was very little difference in the response you'd expect from that selection, meaning that although lamb value may have changed quite a bit, the emphasis that we put on those different traits has not, it's only had a subtle change, as it should be if we're doing things right. We don't want to see radical changes that means we've been out of kilter for a little while. So yeah, we're confident that that 5-year time frame seems to be about right, and we'll do shorter if there's a rapid change or a rapid obvious value.
Now, are those values, those weightings, those economic weightings strictly linear, or do they take into account the fact that every extra lamb or every extra kilo or every less bit of fat on it isn't necessarily the same value as the previous?
I'm really pleased to ask that one because up until recently it has been linear. But we've long recognised that our some of our reproduction or NLBs in our stud flocks, some of them are getting very high and getting extreme, and actually there's been animals that have been dominating the common index or maternal worth indexes or DPOs, mm-hmm. as you talked about in the past, just based on reproduction alone, and that didn't seem to be appropriate. Mm. So what we worked with, we engaged Abacus Bio to have a look at whether or not there should be a curve with the relationship, mm-hmm. so that once it gets to a certain point, there should be a less reward mm-hmm. for every extra lamb. And that's what's come out recently with the dual-purpose capped reproduction. Mm-hmm. Now, the capped meaning that at a certain point, the amount of reward for that extra mm-hmm. NLB is lessening a little. And so that, at the moment, I think it maximises out around just above 1,000, or starts impacting mm-hmm. around 1,000 index points and up to about 1,500. So,
okay.
Yeah, so that's it seems to be a really good measure to do. It was a wee bit tricky yep. to implement, but actually mm. now that we see it, we may look at it at other places where it might be relevant okay. to do.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's only an NLB, number of lambs born at the
currently,
moment.
Currently, yes. Yep. Yeah.
Because the other one has been fat or lean,
mm.
And that's been certainly an argument that at least the last 5 years that we needed to get our lambs leaner, but we've gone too far. It's not yep. a straight line.
So there might be an optimum. So, yeah, we'll be looking further into that mm-hmm. and applying it where it's appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
And back on the fat one, though, like we have done a really good job of stripping a lot of fat out of our sheep by doing selection mm. for leanness. And what we've done in our indexes to respond to that is to drop a... there's now no penalty on fat for the maternal animals,
mm-hmm.
and we've reduced the amount of penalty in the terminal sire as well. So it's just recognising that we have probably okay. getting close enough in our yep. selection pressure to in that direction.
And that's just... But that's supplying... That's blanket across all animals in the
correct.
Index, not just where they happen to be
correct.
In the index. Cool. Okay, so let's talk about the whole point of these was to make it a bit more simpler and more effective for commercial farmers in particular, because ultimately that's the reason why BLG exists is mm-hmm. to work with breeders, but the customer and the people who are paying the bills out of levies are by and large commercial farmers. So one of the things the indexes now allow us to do is to compare, for argument's sake, a Perrondale in South Canterbury with a Romney in the King Country,
mm-hmm.
and we'll get on to some of the specific things like facial eczema in a minute. But how does that work? Is there enough connectedness there across the whole sheep flock, or how are we doing it when those animals, they may have never exchanged genetics, being completely different breeds, but somehow you've got the links.
Yep. So, yeah, the whole point of linkage, it's breeders can achieve linkage or connectedness through shearing mm-hmm. rams directly. So, but the other option is through using our progeny test, which, mm-hmm. So the central progeny test is now, it's part of BLG's responsibility. Mm-hmm. And we used to analyse in that around 22 rams annually, young and proven rams annually, and did a good job of creating connectedness across the industry. But we've ramped that up to responding that we want to have younger sires on more rams on commercially relevant environments and partnerships with industry.
Uh-huh.
So we've ramped that up so that in 2017 we've actually been assessing 186 rams
uh-huh.
across 7 sites. So really increasing the number of progeny tests and so connectedness for the industry uh-huh. with that. So, and what we need is just for that, you think about your example, the King Country and mm-hmm. Up in the North Island and the Perrondale down in the South Island, is that along the way, they have to share a ram with somebody who shared a ram, who's somebody who shared a ram
yep.
To create that connectedness. Mm-hmm. And it's just a wee holding hands line of
yep.
connectedness,
yep.
if you like, or a spider's web is another way mm-hmm. of describing it. And so breeders are able to see a traffic light, and we've been mm-hmm. starting to promote that quite a bit now, that a traffic light to tell them whether or not they've got good connectedness or a little bit of work to do in mm-hmm. that area, and addressing that where they can. So that's an initiative we're doing, working with breeders. But like I said before, the cool thing for the commercial farmer is they don't have to worry about that.
Mm-hmm.
If it's an across flock value, then that breeder is connected. If it's a within flock value, they may not be connected. You might want to ask about
okay.
how they know, how confident they are, how their animals compare to the yep. rest of industry.
Okay, so there is a cut-off point or a margin, the connection has yeah. to be over that. How does a ram buyer know, if they're presented with a figure, how can they tell whether it is it's within flock or across flock?
So you can ask your breeder that.
Mm-hmm.
In catalogues, we're asking them to print that.
Mm-hmm.
And Well, I guess the other development we've had along this way, Aaron, was why it's been easy to put these standard indexes in, is we've revamped the whole engine of SIL, so it now can have all flocks in, all data in, and so there's only one evaluation that we need to run called the NZGE, New Zealand Genetic Evaluation, and so that and it's run weekly, so it's regularly run, always updated with the new information, so it's got the best information in there and the most connectedness possible. So to find out whether or not the figure's based on a within flock or a cross flock, you'll have to ask your breeder, but I would hope that they would print that or flag that for you.
Great. All right, let's talk about some of the specific components of these indexes. So maternal worth, NZMW, has got reproduction, survival, growth, adult size and wool. In wool, just as a specific, what are the traits in wool that are measured? Is it simply wool weight, or are you looking at other characteristics?
Currently it is simply wool weight. Yep. For those that have got a more high-value wool, such as a finer wool, there is a mid-micron index that they can look at, but that's not in the standard maternal worth, so it says just weight.
Okie dokie. And there's two... We've touched on facial eczema. The other big one for, and this isn't just so much a regional one, this is a national one, internal parasite resistance. Why is that not part of the overall maternal worth?
Yep, so it is a feature for some breeders, and it is not a feature for many others. So if it became more commonplace, then we would roll it into New Zealand maternal worth. It is a very important trait, but if we... restricted it to just those that were measuring internal parasites, we wouldn't have many flocks eligible.
Okay, so it's more a factor of just the number of flocks that are doing that to a required level rather than...
Correct.
Okay, yeah. Which in turn might be a function of farmer demand, I guess.
Yeah, and there's definitely a lot of interest in this space, so I see that ramping up and being better. And the more that commercial farmers ask about internal parasite measuring, the more there'll be response.
Now, in survival, you talked about, and I think if I remember rightly from way back when, that it's direct and indirect influences.
Correct.
So there's the lamb's own vigour, for want of a better word, and then there's what we indirectly, which is what we would call mothering ability, I guess, the usability to raise that lamb and so on.
Yeah.
So, what's the relative importance of the two of those? Can farmers get an idea? I mean, there's only one index figure presented for them overall.
For maternal, for the maternal ones, yes. Yep. You can go back to the breeding base. If you decide that we're trying to make things simple, so there's just a few numbers to think about, but there are those that are interested in looking at how that breeding or how the index is made up. So you can still, so for survival, you can have a look at the breeding value survival direct or survival maternal. And have a look at the balance of that. Actually, it's an interesting thing to say, reflect back on reproduction, because we've only done the curvilinear thing for the index and not for the breeding value.
Okay.
So if you still do want to find a very high reproductive ram, you can look at the NLB, and it hasn't it's not changed as compared to what it was before. And similarly, if you want to avoid a high reproductive ram, you can do the maternal worth, but look at the NLB, EBB as well.
Good. And that was sort of one of the questions I was building up to on that, because that has been an issue from farmers saying, the high index ram, but he's a high index because he's a freak for reproduction and triplets and quads and, you know, and not so good, whereas I'm after a complete package. So the ability to go and look at the components is still there.
Yes. Yep. And so we think that this way the index will show up a more balanced animal, but you have ability to still have a look for those extremes if you want to, or avoid them or select for them.
Now, one of the ones that's not in there directly, so maybe it's indirectly, I guess, through other traits, is sort of meat and carcass characteristics for maternal.
Yeah.
And we just talked about, you know, fat on a ewe is really important. And body condition scoring is something in my line of work we're doing a heap of work on. And yet here you guys are not selecting for it. What's going on?
Right. So a good one about meat yield. I would love meat yield to be in New Zealand maternal worth. But again, it's that we need to get more people or more breeders focusing on that one. So again, the more commercial farmers ask for where's meat yield, the more people will be measuring it properly, which is it's a tricky one because you need to do eye muscle area scanning, or you need to be able to do a proper progeny test situation where you're killing, you know, a commercial progeny, so not a bias set, a proper unbiased set. So that's why meat's a bit tricky. But I'd love to see that being more mainstream for maternal animals. But it's about, you know, breeders' choices of where they're putting their selection pressure. You can add it. So if, as a commercial farmer, if meat yields are absolutely must have for you, you can do the New Zealand maternal worth plus meat.
Yep.
Same for body condition score, actually. If body condition score or the ability of that animal to maintain condition is really important to you, you can ask for New Zealand maternal worth plus that body condition score.
Being so you've got a body condition score EBVs now?
Yes, we do. It started off as a research one, but we've got enough data now to make have confidence about the value it brings in. And this is about its ability to be genetically have more condition. So not, you know, it will vary throughout the year, but we know that some animals will tend to be at the top.
How long has that been in there?
In the last 12 months.
Well, that's good timing, because we're sort of under a major push at the moment. I mean, it's you'll see a lot of stuff on the Beef and Lamb New Zealand website at the moment around body condition scoring as a tool that, certainly as we've pushed sheep to higher performance, has become more and more important, the ability of keeping that condition on their back. So, nice to see the alignment.
Good. And it's, I suppose it's in response to around our adult size. We've had a lot of discussion about adult size. I suppose it's been out there a bit about whether or not we're applying a fair penalty. Do people really care about adult size, etc.? But we just know that if we increase our accelerator pedal on the growth, lamb growth, we do tend to get a bigger adult size. And at the moment, we didn't have any other measure of feed budget or how much extra feed the animal might have apart from size. Additional body condition score has really helped to make sure that when we do measure adult size, we know it's of a fair body condition score. So we can make corrections for that. So those are going hand in hand really well. Right. At least a body condition score with the cages of live weights, talking a little bit about frame, although actual height and stuff is not part of it yet. So, that's
cool.
Going in the right direction.
Okay. Terminal worth, NZTW, and there's only survival, growth, and meat yield in there. Now, this is another one of those, not a myth or a legend, but one that comes up regularly. Reproduction's not in there, and look, I'm fairly convinced it's not in there. I talked to farmers about why it shouldn't be in there. I know it's an important tray for the breeders of rams, because they want to have plenty of them to sell, but just go over and reinforce why number of lambs born is not an important tray for terminal size.
So with a terminal sire in a commercial situation, I'm expecting all of those animals to be killed. So they're not going to make it to be reproducing themselves. And the ram at his mating cannot increase the number of eggs that are twin or single. He may be able to increase the number that survives, the survivals in there. So of those that were born, more of them might make it to weaning. And so that's why reproduction's not in, but survival is.
So that terminal sire can have no... He can have influence on how many of those lambs survive to tailing and weaning, but he won't have any influence on the scanning percentage, more or less.
No, that's right.
I'm the father of twins myself, so there's all my myths and legends just gone down. So none of my work at all. Anyway, all right, so that's nice and simple on the terminal worth side of things, but let's get to the biggie, certainly for the upper half of the country, in facial eczema, which is significant for nearly all of the North Island. It's into parts of the South Island, and all the predictions, this is another project I'm involved with at the moment, is it's going to become more important for the South Island, particularly the warmer areas too. So why is it not a standard part of the index?
So for the southern regions, that the facial eczema, because it hasn't, and we haven't really recognised until about now that it may come through the south. So it hasn't been a feature or a requirement for southern breeders to be concerned about facial eczema. They've been allowed to have more of their selection pressure on the growth and other traits that might be for their local clients featuring there. For those that are selling into the North Island, that would be a little bit more of a concern. So if you're for a southern breeder selling into an EFI environment, it would be more of a concern, and I would be expecting commercial farmers to think about are these animals actually fit for their particular environment, or have they got some contingencies around how they're managing facial eczema that they don't mind having animals not, tolerant for that. So, and definitely for our North Island counterparts, it's very important. FE is a very expensive trait to measure for stud breeders, so I appreciate there's a lot of pain, and actually to do it well is difficult. So, hats off to those involved in doing that well and putting a lot of investment into there with that, dosing enough animals and doing enough selection, even using natural challenge and genomics to help improve their DPX, which is the dual purpose facial eczema index.
So you may not be able to comment directly on this one, Annie, and in your eye, I don't know, but for those hot facial eczema areas, for want of a better word, selecting on just the New Zealand maternal worth by itself would not be something you'd advise. I mean,
it'd be risky. Yeah. I think you would need, you'd definitely need facial eczema in there. So New Zealand maternal worth plus FE.
Yeah. And there's no, that doesn't necessarily mean rams have to be bred in that environment, because I know there are, and I know I don't want to hark about the breed, but Perindale breeders, I know, for example, in the lower half of the South Island, have been working on facial eczema tolerance because the genes aren't, don't have to be in a facial eczema area to be
found. And popular or not, but there are stud breeders have been buying in high value, high tolerant rams and working on a good strong selection program, spending a lot of money on dosing and also on genomics to help accelerate their program. So there are some in the south that can have a ram that can survive in that area, but it's just, you have a look at those genetic trends and see that the DPX is guiding you as to whether or not that's going to be an animal that could survive there.
No, look, it's even though, you know, the new indexes are simpler and more straightforward, nothing's ever black and white in ram buying. There's structural issues, ability to serve and all those sorts of things, and then there's these things like facial eczema and so
on. Correct. We can't find one ram to be perfect on all environments and we have to recognise people need choice still.
There's probably a few breeders listening to this that are banging the table at this moment going, I've got them. But anyway, no, I know what that's like. Look, and we're going to talk a bit later about the breeder and the rams and so on, that finding those. But I do want to harp on facial eczema because I haven't had any direct experience with myself growing up down in the south and working in the south, but have been involved in a project over the last year to try and improve our lot. And there are no silver bullets in farming, but breeding for tolerance for facial eczema in sheep is probably as close as we get to a bronze bullet, at least from what I can see. I mean, it's the breeders have made remarkable progress, and it just seems to work. Is that sort of your observation with working with those breeders?
Yes. So those that have been selecting and achieving well with their DPX tend to be having animals that survive a challenge better.
Yep.
So certainly, yeah.
Yep.
But what we've also recognised working with those breeders is that there's difficulties for them to shear rams because of they've got different breeds, they've got different dose rates, and so it's quite complicated to, and because they're trying to accelerate their program so much, it's difficult for them to undo their program by bringing in a ram sheared from maybe a lesser environment. So that's where we're having a bit of an initiative, Aaron, and a progeny test specifically around FE, but it's just on its infancy at the moment, and we'll see if we can get some help there.
No, look, that's it's a personal bugbear at the moment, even though I'm not in an FE area, but breeding for tolerance to facial eczema in sheep should be as close as a no-brainer as we ever have in anything in selection.
In my experience at AgResearch, when I was based in Wellington, I did have a project and the animals were affected by facial eczema, and it killed my trial, and it really hurt my animals. And so I have a real personal feeling about it as well, a visual of how mean the disease is. And also that buying intolerant animals, and I put this in inverted quotes, they actually were animals that had suffered but just hadn't died, and they were actually still compromised. So, you know, I have a lot of empathy for those in those environments. It's tough.
Yeah. And it's not a facial eczema podcast, but it's when what you see is only the tip of the iceberg too. It's the subclinical impacts that are probably really costing the industry.
Yes.
All right, enough for FE. Let's move on. What's my next question? We've talked about connectedness. Let's talk about putting this into practice. So looking at a ram in the pen is one thing, looking at the figures is another thing, but ultimately you only get to look at and select from the rams that are there on the breeder's farm or in the breeder's flock that you've gone to. So choosing the breeder is probably one of the biggest thing.
Part of the biggest thing. Actually, Aaron, when we do our ram buyers workshops, I think you've done some of those as well, we really lead it off with commercial farmers starting with the genetic plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where are you now? What's the market telling you? And where do you want to be? And that way you can look at the specific traits that you need to be seeking in your ram team. And then you can actually measure it the next year to see if you're making any progress in that direction. That means you must be selecting the right rams. We've developed some questions around that, probing, and so we've got a ram buying guide that we've got on our website and stuff now. It's got a genetic plan with some prompting questions in there if you want to get a start. But that's very important to first know, the key three traits or so that you are really hot for, things that you need to seek, things that you need to, the absolute must-haves, and it is easier to find or choose three or four different traits rather than do 10 traits that you must select for. It's hard to find a ram that's perfect at everything. Yep. So,
So once they've been there, done the genetic plan, you know, changing breeders is a big deal, but if people want to, what information is out there for them to help make that choice, or rather than just what they see in, no offence, but what they see in advertising in Farmers Weekly, for example?
So we've developed a free app, you can download it, called Flock Finder. So if you have a look at the App Store if you're on an iPhone, or have a look, just search for Flock Finder through Safari if you're on Android, and you should be able to download that. It's been... Some breeders have told me that it's a bit like a directory of stud breeders. Well, yeah, it is. So it's about a directory of stud breeders, what they're recording for, and if they're recording for it, they're more likely to be making some gain in that area. You still need to ask if they're actually making gain by having a look at a genetic trend or something, but at least if they're recording for it, it's more likely an important part of their program. On that Flock Finder, there's also some a wee information term. So if you've forgotten what indexes mean or breeding values mean, there's a wee you know, directory of information in there about, you know, if you can drill down to that. But it tells you what size the flock is, where it's located. You can put filters on for being looking at maternal animals, you know, breeding for FE if you like, or and maybe within 250k radius of you, and it'll pop up with a number of breeders that fit that criteria. So it's like a wee window into sill, if you like. So that's the first thing about exploring breeders that may also fit your program. And your own breeder that you're already seeking may well be in there. And you can even check them out by, you know, typing in their name or their flock number to pop, see how they work on that. There is, on our website, and I've just, it's been a long time coming, this revamping of our website. We've sort of said, watch this space for the last few years, but we've finally released an updated SIL and Beef and Lamb Genetics website. So the SIL website should be a more, hopefully a better experience tripping through that than it has been in the past. On there, you can find sire leader lists. Now, these are about the top brands that are in the industry that are connected and everything. So I can tell you about the flocks that are performing really highly up there. Those rams themselves may be older and might be competition with other stud breeders to be getting access to those rams. But it could give you an indicator of what flocks are performing top in those particular different traits. You can look at, on that website, you can find breeders that are doing, are registered for health trait things, such as worm feck and fish wexler and other restricted type traits. Well, you've got to be following a proper protocol so that you're definitely making the right selection things. And so those are the starting tools that we've provided for Beef and Lamb and through SIL to guide you to find a breeder.
So look, for those of you that may have been trying to find a piece of paper and scribble that down, and those of you that are driving listening to this, I hope you're not, but we will put all the links to this stuff in the podcast description as well, so you better just click on it and go directly to them. So we will tell you where to go. But I mean, summarise that again. I mean, it's not, just as we've talked about, selecting an individual ram isn't solely objective. Ultimately, it's the same with flock finding, that it's going to give you some suggestions. It might narrow it down to 5 or 10, and then... the personal factor, that relationship with your breed, is still something we put a lot of weight on.
Absolutely. And if you've done your genetic plan, take that along to your breeder and show them these are the things that I'm looking for because of these reasons. And I think it'll help that conversation. And breeders are doing a great job in these areas and really want to describe how they're getting there. I mean, it's no problem asking questions.
No, look, that's a good point. I think, you know, there might be 5 breeders who've got great stock. One of them is going to be probably the right one for you because of that personal relationship and the one you get on with, enjoy working with. And, yeah, the breeders I've worked with over the years, they just want to help their farmers. They enjoy seeing their ram clients do better. And obviously it's good business for them. All righty. Moving on, one last thing I wanted to talk about, and before we might start wrapping it up, is they've got the indexes. There's another wee tool. I'm not sure where it's at. If you've selected your breeder, you've asked them to show the rams of a certain index cut, etc., and then you've got those rams in there in your price range or in the desired trays in the yard. They all look okay. You've gone through the ones you like the look of or don't like the look of, one that was looking at you funny and things like that. But there's two, for all intents and purposes, are identical otherwise, but one's got a higher New Zealand maternal worth, say, than the other. How can a commercial farmer work out how much better or how much more one ram might be worth to them the other using these figures?
Look, it's a tool I'm trying to make public at the moment. I've just got it in a beta test form at the moment called working title is a ram value calculator. And so what we've done, by just thinking about the parameters of your own farm, so there's a wee window where you type in, you know, how many years you keep your ram, what your lambing percentage is, how many lambings you get out of your ewes, how many replacement ewes you're looking for, whether you're not putting anything to a terminal sire, those sorts of questions in there. And you plug your own data into mm-hmm. there, and then you look at, and then you go to the other window where you put in the RAM A versus RAM B, mm-hmm. and it will tell you the amount of value extra you're going to get from one RAM versus the other. And it can surprise some people with those things. We've been doing this with the beta testing version of it. We've been going out and talking about it on workshop days. And that is one big surprise about how to get more value out of your maternal RAMs is just whether or not you're using a terminal sire. Mm. So if you put in, you know, say, 35-40% of your use to a terminal sire, you can often double the amount you're getting of value out of your terminal or your maternal RAM. Yep. So there's some little surprises in there, but it can maybe help you decide, is this RAM really much more worth? Mm-hmm. Like it might be $1,200 more value to you, but only well, the same price, or maybe only a couple hundred dollars more expensive. So
yeah,
just depending on your own program.
Yep. No, it's good, because I'm way back, you're one of your predecessors, Mark Young, that built it on an Excel spreadsheet, and it was fascinating. I mean, I don't know how many people will take it along to the yards and apply it to each RAM to help make their buying decisions, but it'll tell you a lot about how you can get the best value out of your RAMs. And we've been on for a long time. You know, good terminal size are a great investment. We should be using them more in the industry because of the meat characteristics they add, the extra value they add. But that also means you make better money out of the... You can spend more money and or make better money out of the dual purpose you use, because you're only buying a smaller team, and therefore hopefully a higher average value team to breed your replacements.
And the calculator only just tells you about the value of the maternal RAM without thinking about the fact you've put your best use to your maternal RAM, or you've got even more value out of the lambs from the terminal side. So, you know, it's a good little eye-opener.
It's nice. All these things are tying in because we're some modules coming.
Easy.
Modules coming on the Beef and Lamb New Zealand website around exactly that, mating decisions and which ewes should go to the ram and selecting the best ewes, not just putting them all to the replacement and hoping for having to have a huge hogget flock to select from, but actually trying to target and breed better hoggets from day one.
Great coordination. Yep.
Alrighty. Hey, look, just looking at the time, that's about 45 minutes exactly. Look at that. That's good, which is normally where I like to have these. So, look, any closing comments?
I'd really love to hear feedback from commercial farmers' experience with the ram buying and stuff this year with the campaign that we've done. We've done that on behalf of commercial farmers, so and if there's more that we can do or more simplicity that you can bring out to the commercial farmers to make it more transparent for them to buying rams, have confidence in trying new genetics, that's something I'd really love to help them with. It's part of my role.
That's what you're here for. And look, if you have listened to this, and this is one way of getting information across, but it's hard to beat actually doing it hands-on, spending some time, and normally it's with Annie, at one of our ram buying workshops. So if you haven't seen one of those advertised locally on your Beef and Lamb New Zealand e-diary, which I hope you're all getting, then contact us via our 0800 number, our website, or your local extension manager and say you want to get along to one of those. It's a chance to go through this stuff in some depth, actually get your hands on some real rams with some real figures and put it into practice, have a go at what it involves so that you've got confidence when you have got your own genetic plan that Annie referred to and you're going and talking to your current breeder or your future breeder about where you go. All right, look, on that note, I'm going to wind it up. I think we've covered a fair bit today. As I say, in the links to this with this podcast, we'll put links to a number of the things we've referred to here so you can find out that further information or just give 0800 Beef Lamb a call. And thanks for your time. Bye-bye.